Hi everyone, it's Mark here. I wanted to jump in and record this very special episode of the Unconventionalist podcast to share with you some exciting news that just happened a few days ago, and that is that my TEDx talk, What They Don't Tell You About Entrepreneurship, has just hit 1 million views on YouTube, which kind of feels crazy. And in a way, looking back at the journey, I'm sort of not surprised. But one of the biggest questions I get often is, how did you land a TEDx talk? What was the journey like for you to get your TEDx talk? How did you get your talk to get to 1 million views? Now, there's a part of it that's mystery, and there's a part of it that's luck, and a big part of it that is, you know, grit, hard work, strategy, and never giving up. And I decided to record this episode to do almost like the ultimate account of how I ended up giving this TEDx talk and how it got to 1 million views. In my opinion, this is obviously completely subjective to my own experience. But I wanted to also take this opportunity to thank a few people along the way. So I guess one of the first things to say is to go back into how I even came across this idea of TED and TEDx. And if you have no idea what I'm talking about, TED was an organization that was started off, I believe that stood for technology, engineering and design, I think it was. And originally it was a private exclusive kind of event that took place in North America and America, where they would invite some of the world's, you know, biggest thought thinkers and leaders and share some of the research they're working on and new big thinking, all that kind of stuff. And then they opened up the door. They sold the company to Chris Anderson, who became the head creator at TED, and then kind of opened it up, had talks online, and it's kind of exploded. Now, there's a difference between TED and TEDx. I've got to put that out there. So TED is the official body that organizes, I think, annual or biannual events. And then you have TEDx, which are independently run TED events by organizers. Now, not all TEDx events are created equal. In fact, I don't know if the rules have changed, but what traditionally, you know, if you had to apply for a license to be able to run a TEDx talk, you're capped at 100 audience. And then I think if you attend a certain amount of live official TED events, or if you at least attend to one live TED event, you can grow that audience to a certain number. So that's why some events have up to 1,000 audience or even more, and why some have only got small audiences. So just putting that out there, not all TEDx events are created equal. Now, obviously, the end goal that everybody's trying to get is on TED Talk, but, you know, TEDx is also something that's pretty great. And especially if you're, you know, if you run a business or if you're a consultant or an author, a speaker, it's kind of the aspirational stage where most people want to speak to. And it's not that easy to get into, but it can also be easy depending on what strategy you use, right? So I think if I take you back to 2009, and you can read more about this in my book, and I'll put a free link to download the book. You can get a digital copy of the book for free, or you can go and find it on Amazon. It's not you, it's me. But I talk about this at greater depth and length in the book. But effectively in 2009, I went through a bit of a wobble. I had a bad breakup with my relationship back then, my girlfriend back then. We were living in Peru, and I just found out that my grandfather had terminal cancer. So I came back to live in France at my parents' house. I quit my job. And it was a bit of this kind of the perfect storm where everything came down. And looking back at it now, for sure, you know, I was going through a dark time, you know, some form of depression of some kind. I just was a shadow of my former self. You know, I went from being this kind of on purpose, at least that's what it felt, you know, traveling around the world, living in these amazing countries and this amazing work, being the kind of the center of conversation when I walk into the room with my friends around what I used to do, because nobody believed, you know, I lived in Kazakhstan and Bahrain and South Africa and all this kind of stuff. And suddenly being back at my parents' house, which I'd left, you know, when I was 18, 19. So it was difficult. Like I had a bit of an identity crisis, and, you know, I was going to bed really late. I was getting up really late. I wasn't really doing anything. I was kind of pissing away my money. And I forgot the technicalities of how, I think maybe someone sent me a talk saying this might help. You know, my mum was trying to put me in touch with people who might be able to help, you know, counselors, coaches, whatever. And I think I came across a TED talk by Tony Robbins, which is called Why We Do What We Do. And it's kind of an old, you know, TED talk that they released. And it's a really good talk, actually. It's got a great hook at the start if you're interested in what makes a great hook. And I remember watching that and kind of then I went down that rabbit hole of Tony Robbins, I think. But I started discovering more TED Talks and, you know, I was inspired. And I remember going like, oh my God, like this is a really amazing stage. And I'd love to one day talk there. So I think it was in 2010 when I started writing goals, you know, bucket list kind of items on my list. I wrote down giving a TED Talk. I think I wrote a book. I wrote a book, give a TEDx talk, start a business. Skydive, I think I still haven't done that, but that's on there. So I forgot what they were. Get in shape. I'm still working on that. But giving a TED Talks was there. So fast forward to 2012. In 2011, I actually did my video CV. Some of you might have seen. If you haven't, I'll put it in the show notes as well. That hit about 1 million views not so long ago as well. I think it was April or May. And so that video CV went viral and I landed me my dream job at the time. At the Movember Foundation, where I ended up becoming country manager there for 4 years and helped, you know, raise 2.8 million euros for Men's Health and got 110,000 people take part and won a bunch of awards. And that was amazing. And while I was country manager at Movember, my first four countries that I was, when I joined as employee number three of Team Europe, where Bill, our director, and then Dan and me were, and the three of us took care of, I think, 12 European countries. And I was taking care of Movember Belgium and Movember Spain, who had already been launched, but I was tasked to kind of revive it and make it grow and explode it. And then I was tasked to launch in Movember France and Movember Switzerland. So one of the big ways we did that was working with PR agencies on the ground. We had a small budget, but big dreams and big ambitions. And I worked with a great agency in Belgium. And one of the team members on Team Belgium was Marie France. And she, at one point, I forgot when the conversation happened around TEDx or speakers or whatever, but about a few years into Movember, on the 10th of February 2015, I get an email which was written in Flemish from a woman called Hélène Wisenbeek, I think. I don't know how to pronounce it. And she was the organizer of TEDx Women in Antwerp. And obviously, I don't speak Flemish or Dutch, so I kind of reply like, hey, I'm not quite sure what this is, but. And she said, oh, Marie France told me to get in touch with you because we're organizing a TEDx talk and she thought that you might be a good match. And the event was on the 28th of May, 2015. And so I was like, yeah, sounds great. And the theme was momentum. I was like, okay, I'm in. And I found, like, I've done a bit of research for this episode. So bear with me as I look at some of my notes because I want to make sure I get the timeline right. And this is what I wrote. I wrote down, my talk would focus on how to get started and keep on going despite the obstacles in the way and how to sustain that momentum without sacrificing a well-being in the process. I started, when I got the invitation, I started writing a talk and it was called The Art of Starting. It doesn't matter what you're trying to start. It's what you become in the process that matters. That was kind of my, what I later on came to learn as like the through line that I thought I was going to do. So I was excited. I let people know about it and, you know, that was great and I was proud and finally I was going to be able to tick up the box. And on the 1st of March 2015, I dropped them an email saying, hey, I'm about to put my tickets. Just want to check that everything's okay. Looking forward to it. And, you know, 10 days later on the 12th of March, I got an email back from the organizer basically saying, and I'm quoting, you know, because we have too many people on our shortlist in the coaching sector, we decided not to ask you this time. I'm so sorry. Thank you for your enthusiasm and let's keep in touch. And I was devastated. I was really upset. I remember being really upset and kind of going, oh my gosh, like I thought this was it. I thought it was in the bag. And here I was kind of telling everybody about it and felt like a bit of an idiot. And that same day, I forwarded the email to Marie France who introduced me and she wrote, you will one day give a TEDx talk anyway. And that's what I believed. I thought, okay, I'm going to hold on to it. It's just not my time yet. Obviously disappointed and just kept going. Did lots of different adventures. I've always had side hustles on my full-time jobs. And, you know, I ran a retreat in Morocco, which was amazing. One of the favorite things I've ever done in my life. I wrote a book, got that published. I launched a startup, a plant-based protein drink company in 7 days with a £100 budget. Like I did all these crazy things. And then on the 28th of April, I think it was my last, 2016, it was my last day at Movember. I remember that because I wanted to quit on my birthday on the 4th of May. But I think that was like over the weekend or something like that. So we decided to leave end of April. So I left end of April and started up my company and my business, and that's a whole other conversation. But I remember we were off in the summer with my partner, and we were traveling, and she'd been contacted by a friend of hers called Sophie Miller, who at the time was working at Escape the City. And she'd asked Julie if she'd be up for perhaps coming in to give another talk, because Julie was giving some talks at Escape the City at the time, a little bit on finding your career, finding your path. And if she'd be interested in maybe co-leading the Escape the City tribe, the Escape Tribe, which effectively is around a career change program that Escape the City used to have. I don't know if they still do. And Julie thought that might be something I'd be really good at. So I had a chat at the airport on the 20th of June, 2016 with Sophie Miller. That, you know, was a great chat. And we basically said, oh, let's meet up on the 12th of July. They had an event up. I could come and talk and share my story. And we take it from there. So did that on the 12th of July, gave a talk that was quite fun. Got to meet a little bit the environment and the people, and it was a great group of people attending. And then we kind of emailed back and forth with Sophie, and on the 18th of August, we jumped on Skype and had a chat, and that's where she kind of invited me to become a co-leader and to sort of co-create, co-shape this program to take a group of, I forgot how much there were, at least 30 plus, I want to say. Were there 50 plus? I don't even remember. But a big group of amazing people from accountants, lawyers, consultants, ad execs, just so many different amazing people who were kind of on a journey of trying to do more meaningful and purposeful work, which was right at my bag because I'd written a book about kind of how to quit your job and do work you love and find meaning and purpose and all this stuff. So I got the dates, and we're going to kick off on the 9th of September, 2016. All this is relevant, by the way. This is building up, and you're going to understand why in a second. I was looking through my notes. What's crazy, and this is also, I want to take a side note just to remind you all that if you're starting off, right, back then, when I started off in 2016, this is maybe what, just a few months after I started my company, I was getting paid at Escape the City £150 a day, right? Which now is bananas. I mean, but that's just to see the progress of how far I've come and how much we need to first pay our dues and do our laps. But I was getting paid £150 a day. And I gave it all, and I loved it. It was an amazing experience. I love the people on the program. Sophie Miller is an absolute legend. It was one of the best things I ever did to kind of work with her and co-lead with her and co-create. And just before the program started, we were kind of designing the program, who were going to invite as speakers for different parts of the program. And she sent me an email on the 6th of September, 2016. It was literally just a few days before we were going to kick off the Escape Tribe program. She sent me the email of this guy called Joseph Liu. And I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Joseph, who gave a TEDx talk at TEDx Cardiff back in May 2014. Well, at least the video came out in 2014, and it was called Reshaping the Story of Your Career. I remember seeing that talk, and I thought, oh, that was really cool. And I remember looking, oh, the TEDx Cardiff. Oh, my mum's, you know, Welsh, or my family's from Wales, and that'd be a really cool place to do for one day of your TEDx. But I didn't really think anything of it. And meanwhile, I got, I don't know how I saw this. I think it might have been an email from Google Campus. But I attended an event in, I want to say, around the 14th of September, 2016. Maybe a week or so after that, when we just started the program, where I invited along my mate, Thomas Olivier, who's the founder and CEO of Omnos, who's also a guest on episode 100 of the podcast, if you want to go back and check that out. And took him over. We went over to Google Campus to watch this guy called Alex Mary, who was a speaker coach, to give a presentation on how to give a TEDx talk effectively. And it was interesting. And Alex had mentored a bunch of TEDx speakers, including Roger Frampton, who has like millions of views. And he also was the mentor to Brian Rose. I think his TEDx talk is now being pulled down, but he was a speaker coach too. So he got quite a few, you know, clients and big names who gave some big talks. And following the event, basically Alex sent out an email saying, hey, I'm going to run a program. It was called TEDx Ready Mentoring Program. He had to change the name because of legal issues with TEDx, so he couldn't call it TEDx Ready Mentoring Program anymore. But that's what it was called back then. It was a six-month program. It was going to kick off on the 5th of October, 2016, up until the 21st of March, 2017, with the ultimate goal of getting you to deliver like an amazing, outstanding TEDx talk stage. Now, here's the crazy thing. Alex, back then, that was the first cohort he ever did, right? That was the first program he ever launched. And he charged £300 for 6 months of coaching just because he wanted to get it tested. Like, I think now it's, I don't know how much it is, maybe £3,000 or £5,000 if you want to do that program, maybe even more. I don't even know. But back then it was £300, which is nuts. And that's where I met Tom Boone, who became a friend and who also went off and gave a great TEDx talk on PTSD and why, you know, our past doesn't define who we are. And the program was effectively like twice a month. We'd jump on a call, you know, every first and last Wednesday of the month, and we'd get a webinar on a topic, and then we'd kind of troubleshoot. And we had like exercise in between. It's like write our bios or contact organizers and shape our talk, record and that kind of stuff. So while this was happening, you know, I'm still building my business. I'm delivering work with Escape the City. I've got my one-to-one private clients at the time. And I start contacting different TEDx organizations. And different people introduced me to different organizers. And it was on the 21st of October, 2016, I actually contacted the organizers of TEDx Cardiff. Now, what I did is, one way you can do this is if you go on the website, I don't know if this still is relevant, but you would go on the TED website and you would look at the TEDx websites and they would give you the dates by geographic location. So let's say you live in the UK or Portland or Melbourne or wherever, South Africa, you can look at where all the TEDx events are going to be happening next. And you look at the calendar and you got to look at least minimum 3 to 6 months ahead. And you can see all the different events that are scheduled to happen. And then usually when you click on those events, they'll have details. So you've got to be careful. There's TEDx Education, TEDx Women, TEDx Business. There's a few of them that, depending on what your topic is, you might want to shy away from or actually run towards, right? But mine wasn't specific to education. It wasn't specific to women's right or equality. And it wasn't specific to a specific business working in a business, right? So as in TEDx Business, I think usually is like if you're going to do it within a company, they organize that, but only members of the company can give talks there. I hope that makes sense. Something like that. So anyway, so I started contacting different people, didn't really hear back. But I did contact TEDx Cardiff and I did my homework. I saw the organizers, you know, that there was Claire and Neil who were organizing it. I dropped an email and a message. And eventually I got a message back from Claire saying, hey, thanks for getting in touch. You know, we're still open to looking at speakers, but you know, what are you thinking about? And I've got my notes in. My potential idea I'm playing around with is, and this is what I answered, what you do doesn't make you happy, what you feel does. So, and I had a few, but interestingly, I had a few titles, which was, we need to talk about shame, why you don't need to start a business to be happy, and the dark side of entrepreneurship. So I must have been on something in the right direction, at least. But I didn't have a big platform by any means. I had a podcast, but I had only 40 episodes out. And, you know, I dropped this long email and she said, well, look, let's jump on a call and see. And that didn't happen until the 6th of December, 2016. So almost like a month and a half after that initial contact. And I'm still doing the program with Alex Marion, getting to shape some ideas. And I'm going off on this idea thing, right? Which is funny and yet a little bit embarrassing, but I'll tell you more about that in a second. And so I didn't really hear back. So we jumped on Skype and she basically explained that in order to give a TEDx talk at TEDx Cardiff, if you have to have some kind of Welsh connection, either you're Welsh or, you know, and because my mom's Welsh, half Welsh at least, but that was kind of the connection. So, you know, I sent back an email afterwards saying, hey, you know, great speaking to you. Here are some recap of my ideas. I didn't really hear back from anything. So I recorded a video that I sent on the 14th of December, like about a week after that Skype call. And I'll put it in the show notes. I've never actually released this video before. But I sent a video of just me trying to explain a bit better my idea. It's a bit cringeworthy to look at it now. But effectively, I was just trying to get out there, be different, and just show her that I was keen and that I was, you know, and I've got an epic beard. It's mad. And the through line idea that I came up with was, what most of us seek is clarity, but what most of us need is trust. Now, that was kind of the talk that I decided I was going to go with in the end. And it's the talk I was working on. And on the 16th of December, 2016, I got an email from Claire saying, hey, Mark, sorry again for the radio silence. I spoke to Neil yesterday and it's a yes from us. We'd love to have you on board. So it's been, you know, it's a bit hectic and she was going to send me an email to confirm. And she sent me that on the 21st of December, 2016. So I was in right before the end of the year. Like, you know, I just started my business that basically May 2016. By December, I was booked in. For the following year, it was going to happen, I believe, on the 22nd of April, 2017 was the event. And I was ecstatic. I was, you know, but what happened next is something I could have never imagined. Right after I was confirmed as a speaker, I went from like this, oh my God, this is amazing, to total panic. I can't really describe the feeling, but it's a feeling that's familiar and I can still recognize it at times. Like you fight really hard to get something and then you get it. And then everything kicks in terms of self-doubt, you know, saboteurs, limiting beliefs, imposter syndrome, all of that stuff that comes up, unwanted house guests who come in your head and tell you these negative things. And I spent, honestly, the next 5 months of hell, my partner can testify to that. I was just super stressed. I was losing sleep because I was like, what am I going to talk about? Who the hell am I to talk about this? And I was driving my partner nuts. I was putting post-its all over the flat and trying to figure this out. I was hesitating, kept on jumping from idea to idea. And eventually I wrote, right, over the course of the next couple of months, I wrote this talk, which really was around this idea of, you know, what most of us seek is clarity, but what most of us need is trust. And I believed in that idea. And I remember when the tickets went on sale, 2nd of February, they sold out pretty quickly. But I was so grateful because friends, clients, family had bought tickets. And I knew they were coming. I knew they were coming live. So I just want to give a big shout out. So my mum flew from France over to Cardiff. She wanted to be there, which was amazing. And I got to give a big shout out to Tom Boone. I went to his TEDx talk and he came to mine all the way to Cardiff. Victoria McKay, who also came. Billy Quinlan, who's been on the show. She's the co-founder of, and CEO of Furley. Claudia, who we all know as Cloud Colucci, who also came on the podcast, talk about her business, and Ben Bradbury, who played an instrumental role as well in shaping my TEDx talk, as well as Cooley Singh, and of course, my partner, Julie. So I knew that they were coming, and there was also that pressure of being in front of a live audience of at least 400 people, plus being filmed and potentially being on the website. Because by the way, not all TEDx talk end up on YouTube, which is a small known fact. And I started panicking. I really did. And I'm still going through this program. And I think early on in September 2016, I forgot to say this, but I reached out to Tamsin Webster, who I heard on a podcast. She was at least the curator of TEDx Cambridge, and she was a speaker coach. And I had like a session with her. I paid like $500, I think, at the time, which was a huge amount of money for me because I was just kicking off. But I really wanted to get, and I thought I would get like this amazing insight and clarity out of the strategy. You know, obviously no one can work miracles. You know, the idea, thought it was, we would just kind of distill the idea, made a few notes, and I was supposed to continue working with it, but I didn't. I kind of said like, I'm going at this for all the wrong reasons. I need to take a breather. That was before I was confirmed on my TEDx talk, by the way. So I also spoke to other TEDx speakers. So I was introduced by a family friend to a guy called Claire Michonneau, who's a French guy who's given two amazing TED Talks, they're in French, on immigration and why, you know, in France, what we call gypsies, travelers are actually the last remaining example of ancient civilization and culture and how we used to live, and they're a pivotal role of society. Like, it's a really interesting, interesting talk, but that's in French. I'll try and link that. And then 21 days out, now this is where it gets juicy, 21 days out of the talk. So keep in mind that I've been working on this talk. It's been this big thing I've been wanting to do for over a decade almost. Actually, what I'm talking about, five or 6 years. And I decided 21 days out of my talk to actually go and share that talk with one friend in a different location every day on the lead up to it so I can get feedback and learn how to make it better. And I'll tell you what, it's one of the most grueling things I've ever done in my life, for sure. I just want to give you some context. Most people don't understand this, that I think is what separates amateurs from professionals when it comes down to delivering outstanding presentations or talks. And it's the level of preparation you put in. You make it look like you're winging it. You're making it look like it's easy, but actually you've put in a tremendous amount of work in the background. I learned that from hanging out with stand-up comedians in South Africa, including Trevor Noah back in 2008, where I saw the amount of work they would put in, and they would just drill their routines and do all these different stand-up comedy clubs and bars and events. And they would just do the same set over and over and over and over again and just adapt and drill. And then when you actually saw them on specials or you saw them at bigger events, it felt like everything was improvised and fresh, but actually they'd done it 100 times. Kevin Hart, I think, tours, I want to say 200 plus times a year before he records a special. So that's the level of preparation that goes in. So 21 days out, I decided every single day to give my talk a practice. And so I'd you know, met up with a friend, we'd go for a walk, whatever. And then I'd give the talk and then I'd ask for feedback. And it was soul crushing. As I was giving the talk, my original talk, I just thought it wasn't that good. And people were giving me different feedback. There was no resonance. I can't name everyone because there was just so many people. You know, from Joey Ra, Zayd Al Salim, Sophie Miller, Max Van Hodge. And obviously I'll talk about Ben and Alex and Amrish in a second. But every time I'd give the talk, I'd be like a little bit more crushed. And, you know, I'd get feedback and it was all conflicting. So we got towards 10 days out, I think it was, to the event. Around the 10th or 11th of April, 2017 at this point. And I'm invited to go back to Escape the City, but this time for the Startup Tribe to give a talk. And I wrote a really quick talk around this concept of the overglorification of entrepreneurship. And actually, entrepreneurship sucks and it's hard, right? It was kind of, and I went up there, had a few notes, and I gave this talk and I practiced it and I gave it and it landed quite well. And I remember the day after that, I was seeing Alex Mary, who up until then had been helping out with, you know, the program. And he got me to meet me up at Hyde Park Corner, which is a public space in the UK in London in a park, which is known for, if you stand on a soapbox, as long as you're elevated, you can talk about anything you want. And it's kind of a bit of a entertainment to walk through it because you have half crazy people, half, you know, interesting talks, but you've got a bit of all sorts. So he got me to stand on this box in front of strangers walking by and give my talk. And I gave my talk, which I'd prepared for four or five months. And it was horrible. It was so bad. It was like, I remember just looking at him and I could see his face, and Alex hasn't got a great poker face when it comes down to feedback. And so I said, before you give me your feedback, let me just give you this other talk that I gave last night, which I think resonates a bit more. And so I gave him talk about this whole thing about entrepreneurship, you know, the dark side of entrepreneurship, basically. And he was like, that's your talk. That feels way more you, and you feel more alive. So we went to the coffee shop. I think we had a chat. And then I remember because I had less than a week, I want to say, by this point, that I made the decision to ditch the 4 months of preparation to start from scratch and do this whole new talk. And there's a few people I really want to mention. Like, a lot of people helped out for sure. And like number one would be Judy for bearing with me and my madness. But a couple of people I really want to mention. One of them is Amrish Shah. So Amrish was originally my brother's mate who I met at uni because we all went to the same university, and we became mates when we ended up both living in South Africa at the same time. And he's like this amazing character, eccentric, funny, all out Amrish. And so I gave him practice of my talk, of this new version of the talk. We were sitting in Hampstead Heath. We met up in Hampstead Heath. And he was like, can I be honest? And I was like, yeah. He's like, man, it's boring. It's not really you. And at first I was like, oh, okay. Because little trivia is that Amrish is one of the last people that includes my brother, my mate Dom, and my mate Matt. Those four people are the last people who ever saw me perform a play on stage in my first year of university in 2004, I think it was, or 2003. And so I was acting in this play, and I was kind of like the comedian, I guess, a little bit in this tragic Greek play. And they thought I was just messing it up, but actually I was just like this kind of clown, and I decided to do this kind of role. And so he saw me. So he'd seen me in ways that other people maybe haven't. And so he said, you've got more range than this. Like, you can really push this. And so my intro bit, where I really make fun of this idea of being an entrepreneur, is actually thanks to Amrish, who really pushed me to do that. Like, he says, don't just mention it, just blow it up, go all out, you know, go all in on it. And so he helped me rewrite that and make comments. And so then I, you know, continued practicing. And this is what most people don't understand. Like, I'm practicing this talk, right, when I'm literally giving the same introduction that I have in my final TEDx talk. And I'm giving this and nobody's laughing. Like no one is laughing. But I keep doing it. And then I saw the other person I really want to mention is Ben Bradbury, who not only also came to the live event, but we sat down by the Thames and he helped me write some of the really like jokes. For example, he's the one that came up with the Wi-Fi when I was talking about like, you know, from saber-toothed tigers to a bad Wi-Fi connection. That was his line. So he helped me rewrite some of it as well. And I got so much input from so many different people. That's why most people don't understand. I keep on saying this, like it's one of my mantras, like no impact is an island. You know, the million views, I often say we did it because we did it. It was a team effort. I didn't do it. I showed up and I had to carry most of the weight and, you know, all that stuff. But it was a massive team effort. And again, I'm apologizing if I forgot anybody else who did a major input in the final talk. But, you know, I remember being online with people from all over the world and it was just this crazy thing. So I practiced. And we get to the day before the actual event. So Julie and I get on a train. Now, I need to mention this. I forgot completely to say this. Julie's pregnant by now. So it hasn't even been a year that I started my company. I've got this massive stress with this text that I'm inflicting on myself. And we found out, you know, amazingly that Julie's pregnant with our first kid. And so we go up on the train and she's pregnant and I'm stressing out and I'm going back and forth trying to read these lines and learn these lines, learn this talk by heart up and down the train. And I'm panicking and we get to Cardiff. We check into our hotel in Cardiff and my mum is, I think my mum already arrived and she's already been in town. So we all meet up, we go maybe for dinner and I'm stressed. And I think we go to Vans, like the shop, so I can get a couple of stuff, a couple of shops. Like I bought my outwear. Like I had three outfits. I didn't know what I was going to wear. That's a side note that I'll make at the end around things to think about on your actual day. But the reason why I'm mentioning this is that I was stressed. I really was. I don't get anxious ever, like ever. I don't ever get stressed about anything. But that TEDx talk brought something up. That and my stand-up comedy gig that I did, those are the two most stressful things I've ever had. And I just had these massive insecurity and thoughts because I think I knew deep down the magnitude that this could be and the opportunity it was. But that was a lot of pressure I put on myself, nobody else. You know, I didn't get that much help at all during the whole process. I think I had a couple of chats maybe with one of the organizers or what people, team members, just say, hey, everything okay? Yeah, great. So I didn't really know what to expect. And oh no, sorry. Something I forgot before we get to that evening. I go and check out the venue. I think it was called the Cowshed. And it's like a bar, kind of massive club concert venue thing. And we get there and I get on stage and they're still setting up the whole room. And I'm like, how can I get a practice run? I believe that was the day before. I want to say it was the day before. Maybe it was the morning. My memory is a bit confused now. So I don't know if it was the morning of or if it was the day before. It probably was the morning of, thinking about it now. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I got on stage and I started practicing my talk with the AV system, I think it's called. You know, that kind of audiovisual, yeah, AV system. And within a few minutes, the whole thing crashes, right? The whole screen's, everything crashes. And I'm left on stage and I'm like, well, I'm glad this happened now and not on the actual day because that would suck. But that also enabled me to realize that I need to know this so well that even if the slides aren't up, I don't need them. And so we go for dinner and we go back to the hotel room. My mom, Julie, and I are in the room and I'm just trying to recite and I keep on making mistakes. I'm getting frustrated. I'm mispronouncing things and it's getting really late. And I think at one point I was like, look, just relax. You got it. You know, we'll see you tomorrow morning. Get some rest. And at one point, Julie effectively ripped the script out of my hands and said, forget the script. Stop it. Like, you know this. You are the script. You are the talk. Drop it. Like, you know, you're going too much in your head. And it's true, I had. So I didn't sleep at all that night. I remember I didn't sleep very well at all. In the morning, got up, got dressed. A little pro tip here. Always make sure to have a couple of outfits just in case you don't want to have anyone spitting something on you or you spitting something on yourself and having to worry about that. So make sure you get a couple of outfits. And so I was wearing a certain outfit. We go out there. Some of my friends are arriving. I'm really excited. We get in the room and it was great. Like I could see all the lines of rows of people and the names of the speakers at the front, you know, reserved for speakers. People are starting to pour in. there's a good vibe. I'm excited. My friends, you know, my loved ones are here. And I always remember this. There's a moment where this woman came up to me and said, "Are you Mark DeRoost?" And I was like, "Yeah." She said, "Oh, you're the reason why I'm here." I was like, what do you mean? She's like, "Oh, I listened to your podcast and I heard that you were coming to give a talk, so I got a ticket." And I remember going, whoa, this is how crazy this can be. And I asked, like, "What's your favorite episode and what's your least favorite episode?" And I laughed because I wasn't surprised of her answer, but it was really great. Got a good connection and I was really grateful that she came. And it was this amazing moment of realizing that, oh yeah, when you put a podcast out there, people listen to this far and wide and you may never know who they are, but if you get an opportunity to reach to them or see them, that's such a gift. So I'm really grateful for having approached me. And Julia made this custom made guitar pick. I think it's had read something like, "You've got this," or "We're rooting for you," because she was pregnant with our daughter back then. And the nerves started to rack up a little bit. I started seeing the first talks, and I'll be honest, most of the talks, I was surprised at how little prepared or coached they'd been. Some of them were pacing up and down. Some people were reading notes. So I wasn't too worried about in terms of performance and delivery, but I was worried that I wasn't going to do a great job. And so it came closer to my time. I believe I was in the afternoon, early afternoon, I think. And there were two women before me who gave a talk, which was all their talk was about was like, quit your job, start your business, is the best thing in the world. And here I was going to come after them and say, like, it sucks, it's really hard. So I knew how awkward that was going to be, like the transition between both. But effectively, I got up on stage. I remember the first few steps I met. Oh, wait, sorry, I need to say this. This is a very, very little known fact. I don't think anyone knows this, actually. Before, I think it was about a few days before I left for Cardiff, I recorded my entire talk using my podcast gear, but you can use your phone. I recorded my entire talk. I then added footsteps at the beginning as if I was walking on stage. And at the end, I added clapping noises, super loud cheering clapping noise at the end. And that was my visualization. So I would walk around and I would listen to that tape so I could memorize the words and internalize that feeling and then visualize the clapping in the audience at the end. I've never told this before, but that it was a big part of it for me, kind of internalize and visualize what was going to go down. And so I'm about to step on stage. I step on stage and it goes by so quickly. If any of you have ever done anything with high adrenaline, you know, when I did an amateur MMA fight back in 2011 in November, I remember when that ref said fight, I don't remember anything after that. Blacked out. Complete adrenaline rush. All the game plan went out the window. It's crazy what adrenaline dump does to you. So I get on stage and I remember I said, I think, the first line of my talk, or maybe this I forgot, and the audience laughed. And that was the first time anyone had ever laughed at that first line, despite me having practiced it like 10 times already in front of live people. And that's, Judy says to me that that's the moment she relaxed and she breathed and she knew that I was going to be okay. And look, I look back at that talk and there's a couple of moments I know I messed up. I didn't say the right thing I wanted to do. I forgot some stuff, but ultimately it doesn't matter. I gave that talk. I even got emotional at one point. I remember I looked into the stage. I saw Julie and I got emotional at one point. I remember, and I could see my friends' faces there. And I really connected to it. You know, I wanted to be real and raw. And that's why I knew I needed to give up my previous talk. It just wasn't real. I just knew it, that this was something that needed to be said and not a lot of people dared to speak about it. And that's where I went. I went to a place of truth. And I think if anything, if you want to take away from anything today is, you know, if you're not afraid of what you're saying, you're probably not saying anything worth saying. You know, Tucker Max said something on those lines, but it's true. It's like, if you're not a little bit afraid, then you're probably not going deep enough or you know, you're not going where you need to go. That's just my personal opinion. So I give the talk. The one thing I'll say to you, if you're listening to this and if you one day get an opportunity to give a TEDx talk, I wished I'd cherished those few seconds at the end when I finished my talk before I rush off stage. Because as soon as I finished, you know, I think I heard the claps. Some of my friends stood up and I walked off. And it was like, whoa, and I changed again to my other clothes. So that's another tip. Don't change clothes from the clothes you're on stage because it confuses people. People didn't know if it was me or not, or my twin brother, because I was dressed differently. But it was lovely afterwards. I got lots of amazing comments. My favorite talk actually that day was this woman who was in her 70s or 80s back then, I forgot, who was parachuting, and she was amazing. She was a force of nature. She was probably the best talk I thought that day. I'll try and find a talk and link it in the show notes. So this is the part that I want to share with you, because I think, again, this played a big part in what happened next, okay, in why I think the talk did well. And that is, so, you know, after the 22nd of April, obviously thanked everyone, went back to the hotel, got our stuff, went back to London, continued life, you know, continued business, work, all that stuff. And then the thing about the TEDx talk, you never know how long it's going to take before people edit videos, but sometimes it can be quick, sometimes it can be slow. So the event took place on the 22nd of April, 2017. And then the first version of the video that I saw came out on 8th of June, 2017. And I remember going on YouTube, I was sitting on the couch next to Julie, and I was devastated because it looked terrible. For whatever reason, the editing company of the video, the company that did the editing of the live streaming and also the post-production, had put honestly 2/3 of the screen of static slides with a small 1/3 box with a speaker. And it would sometimes be cropped off when I was walking in. And because there were static slides at the start, I'm doing this whole thing where you see me type live. But that, oh, pause. If you go back and watch my TEDx talk now and you see me typing on my phone and then you see on the background the screen being typing, that was a whole thing to try and do. I had to record a screen of me a few days before typing on Facebook and then trying to sync it with me typing on my phone and live with added soundtrack and stuff. But that's a whole other conversation. So the production was, you know, a little bit out there. So these static titles, you see me typing and doing this whole thing, and it just didn't work. So I wrote immediately an email entitled TEDx Talk Issue, where effectively I said, I'm really, really sad and disappointed to see that this has happened, blah, blah, blah. Can you please take it down and ask the company to re-edit it? And I got to give credit to Claire, like she was responsive. She said, oh, I'm sorry that you're disappointed. You know, I'm going to ask them to do it. You sure you want me to pull it down? I was like, yes, please pull it down, because I'd rather not have it than have that. And she was like, okay, cool, it's pulled down. I'm going to get the money and, you know, we'll try and see if we can pay them to edit it and all this kind of stuff. So she was really, really kind. And we back and forth emailed, didn't hear anything. And then they sent the final edit on the 3rd of July, 2017. And that's where I think the original was like called The Dark Side of Entrepreneurship. And I changed the title to, that's why I changed the title, What They Don't Tell You About Entrepreneurship. And the video came live on YouTube on the 19th of July, 2017. So think about this for a second, right? So my talk came out on the 19th of July, 2017. Now we go back to 2015 when I was hoping to give my original talk, right, in Antwerp. But I'm so glad that didn't happen, because that would have been a far greater talk. It just wouldn't have worked that well, for sure. I know that, you know. So it came out and that was great, and I started sharing it and it did quite well. Now, one thing I did that most people maybe underestimate is that I responded to every comment that people were making. And if you go on my TEDx talk, you will see some horrific comments. Like, I actually wrote a newsletter about this, that you think that, you know, we don't get criticized. Like, I get criticized all the time. YouTube is the worst, I think, of where trolls go and show up in terms of comments. But I shared that in an email because I wanted to make sure that everybody knew that everyone gets criticized and that's not a bad thing. And so that came out and it did quite well, and it kind of grew and grew and grew in numbers. And obviously I talked about it. I tried to get everyone I knew to share it. I thanked everybody who was involved, and I shared the YouTube video with them. And there's a couple of things I want to leave you with. First of all, you know, when we finally hit 1 million, it was mad, but I look back and I go, there was so much that was put into this collectively, and I just never gave up. And the one thing I would say is I knew going in there, and I actually wrote this to Claire and Neil. I said, I've realized, that's why when I changed my talk 10 days before, something I didn't talk about is, I realized I wanted to do a TED talk and a TEDx talk for all the wrong reasons. I wanted to do it because it was all about me, ticking the boxes. I wanted to become famous, grow my business and grow my influence, all this stuff. I wasn't coming from a place I want to serve. And this is not about me, but this is about you. And if you can take one thing away from this, I hope this is it. And so that's why I changed my talk. And I think that's why my talk did so well, because ultimately I spoke about a personal experience, which really is a universal experience for all. And I'm so grateful for all of you who've looked at it, who've shared it, who've posted about it, because you don't get 2 million views on your own. I'll tell you that. You're sure there's about 1,000 of those views? That must be me refreshing to count. there's a couple of them. The first one, an update. I shared with Claire, Neil, and the rest of the team that my video made 1 million. And, you know, they're very generous and congratulated me. And they've moved on now from TEDx Cardiff. They're no longer taking care of that. It's another team. But they mentioned that it's the talk that has probably got the most viewed of all time. So that's a win. That's pretty awesome, especially the whole trial and tribulations to get there. And when I was doing this research for this talk, for this podcast episode, I actually came across a video. I'll put it in the show notes. That felt weird. There's a guy who recorded a video, a kind of an assessment of my TEDx talk. And that was the first. I was like, that's mad. My TEDx talk has generated, a review video. So that was pretty fun. And the last thing I want to leave you with is a little anecdote. And that is a friend of mine and a graduate of my accelerator, Steph Slack, who kept on telling me that she wanted to give a TEDx talk one day. I said, but have you told anyone? Have you told the world? She's like, no. So one of the newsletters she wrote that she wanted to give a TEDx talk and if anybody knew anyone. So I introduced her to a friend of mine who was one of the organizers of TEDx Folkestone. And Steph got invited. I was there on the day when she gave a talk at TEDx Folkestone. It was amazing. I was moved because I knew the journey that Steph had been on, from going from someone who literally in the application to my program wrote, I'm afraid that no one will care about what I have to say and who am I to talk about this, to suddenly going through the whole process, coming out of being really committed to talk about men's mental health and doing something about it, gave a talk about why we need to talk about men's suicide. And her talk has been viewed by over 1.4 million views. And so I want to invite you to think about that for a second. If you have been thinking about wanting to give a signature talk, or you want to share your story, or you want to share your message in some way, then how are you going about it right now? And are you letting other people know that that's your intention? And if you want help on getting clarity on how to do just that and how you can turn your story into a powerful message and how I believe that sharing your personal story authentically can transform your business and really change the world, then I'd love to hear about you, because you can join my waiting list. I'm going to be launching a new program on how to help you shape, share, and sharpen your story so that you can inspire others. And I'm really excited about this. This is coming up in the next few months, I believe, but there's a waiting list. If you are interested, you can go to www.theunconventionalist.com. You get the information there, or just click on the link below the show notes where you can join the waiting list. And we'll be limiting the small group. I'll be working personally with all of you. And it's something that I'm really excited about. So if that's something that's on your path, let me know. I'd love to help and support you. But I hope that was helpful. I hope that, you know, it was a long account, but I really wanted to do it justice to show you the level of stuff that went into this. And I'm sure I've forgotten stuff. I'm sure there's more questions that you have. If you've got any follow-up questions, let me know over on social media, DM, send me a DM or an email or whatever's best and most easy for you. But it was just such an incredible journey. And we hit 1 million views. Which feels crazy, but as I said, I'm not surprised, you know, given the work in it, but also the fact that I trusted my gut instincts at a level around this idea of, I know what's right in the gut. It's really interesting. So yeah, let me know what came up. Good to be back. And thank you so much if you listened to this to the end. I love you. I appreciate you. You matter. Your story matters. And your message has value. So I'll see you next time. Until then, take care of yourself. Enjoy this interesting and challenging summer if you're living in the UK, and the rest of the world. I hope you've got better weather, and I'll see you next time.